And it is 25 minutes after the hour here in the central time zone of Central Texas. That's where we find Dr. Don Clark today as well in Garden Valley, Texas, babysitting his vineyards and turning out wine and taking some time out of his rather busy schedule to talk with us. Does so every Tuesday morning. David Allen Punt is with us, too. He's up in East Dakota, also in the central time zone. So we're all on the same page, chronologically speaking, Don. How's that strike you?
We're on the same page. Well,
I don't know why I said that.
We're on the same system now. I guess we're on the same page for the topic today.
if someone were to look at our DNA under them, I don't know how the electron mice, how do they look at DNA? Do they use microscopes, electron microscopes?
No. There are, it's been a while since I've been in that field, but they used to use electrophoresis, which is kind of a plating technique, and then I'm sure it's all automated now.
Mm-hmm.
You can separate different fragments of the DNA into different bands on a scan, and then I guess you can determine what genes are there and what genes are not there, and you can compare DNA from different people, for example, or different species, and see if they're the same mm-hmm. or different.
Okay, so it's a computer scan, basically. I've seen graphics of it, and they're a bunch of vertical stripes, and somehow they're counted or compared by computers. And I remember is that what they call the genome?
Well, the genome is kind of mapping all of the DNA in the human species.
Mm-hmm.
In Homo sapiens. So the genomic project was to figure out, all of the base pairs, for example, in the human genome, in the human genetics, and then say, okay, you either have a normal gene for this particular gene, or you have an abnormal gene for this particular gene. The problem with that is that we're pretty far away, as we'll talk about as we get further along in the program, but mm-hmm. we're pretty far away from Adam. So nobody had a perfect DNA sample in order to completely figure out, this should be an adenine, for example, or mm-hmm. this should be a guanine in this particular location.
And so that is DNA from person to person was different to some degree.
Oh yeah, different.
I remember when the genome was being evaluated or read, or how, but it was at a time in computer development. This is 20 years ago, something like that. They had to harness the combined power of computers all around the world, and people volunteered to basically lend computer time to the project so they could run data and have it all analyzed. Now that's probably easier now with bigger, faster computers. But it suggests that it's almost a democratic process, putting all this stuff together, a whole lot of people, a whole lot of time, a whole lot of computer power. They didn't have that at all back pre-World War II, when there was also genetic research being done, and I don't know how they did it then, other than by looking at people and taking notes. Do you know anything about that history of genetic research? And I'm thinking about the work that, in particular, the Nazis were doing, the Third Reich were doing before World War II in Germany.
Right. Well, they were, of course, they were trying to develop an Aryan race, the pure Aryan race, as they called it. And so it was done primarily by morphology or physiology. How does, we like the look at this person and we don't like the look of that person, or this person is a white, is a white person, that person's a black person. They're obviously not part of the Aryan race because of their skin color, mm-hmm. Or because of their facial features, or, that type of thing. So the idea was that you get these people that really look nice to us, to us, to them, and, mate them together. And the more you do this, the purer that race becomes. And then we've got this perfect race.
Well, my point in bringing that up was these were observational differences between people that became cataloged under the headings of race. In other words, there's a black race and a yellow race and a brown race and a white race. The word race was used pretty indiscriminately. That was the common word in all those names, in all those categories. And so the concept of this division by race became inculcated pretty much, at least in Western culture. That's now being changed because of the variety of amazing tools we have to actually analyze DNA.
Well, hopefully it's being changed, because if we, you know, if we go back in at least biblical history, which I believe is the correct history, we know that everybody came from Adam and Eve. I mean, and we know that at the time of the flood, there were eight folks that we had DNA samples from. We don't have samples from them, but they were everybody started from these eight folks. So there was Noah and his wife, and of course Shem, Ham, and Japheth, his three sons and their three wives, made up the genetic pool, if you will, for the whole human race that we see today. And so to be able to separate people in, because of morphology or the way they look, is very much a kind of manufactured type of thing. And all of this, at least in relatively modern history, and modern, I want to go back to Darwin, because everybody, you know, knows part of the title of Darwin's book, which is Origin of Species. So, but the complete title of his book is On the Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection or the Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life. The Preservation of Favored Races. So that, from an evolutionary point of view, that gave us the idea that, oh, you know, there's certain races that are more favored than other races. There's certain races that should be on top, and other races should be below, and we can categorize animals, or in this case, people, along those terms. That's what led to Hitler's experimentation with the Aryan race, because the whole concept was that there was a superior race that he could design, or have his, you know, scientists design, that would take over the world. Well, we know that Hitler wanted to take over the world, and he was aggressively moving towards that. So this whole concept of race is an evolutionary concept. It is not a biblical concept.
This sounds like what it was an attempt to impose an objective system on a subjective set of data. In other words, morphology.
And a desire to be on top. In other words, if you're part of the favored race, then you're going to be on top regardless. But if you're not part of the favored race, then you're going to be a laborer, and you will always be a laborer. You won't be the boss. You're always going to be a laborer. And, you know, this concept is, I guess, you know, a very evolutionary, you know, concept. So when we think of this whole thing as, well, we're just looking at just variation within people, there's always this underlying, thing nagging at the back of our minds. There's got to be differences. We got to have differences in people, because we want, ultimately, if we really, you know, look down deep in our soul, we want certain peoples to rule over other peoples. And that's what's driving this whole thing. Even today. I mean, we, even after what happened, after World War II and Hitler's experiment and all of that, people were really disgusted that, oh, these type of human experiments were going on, and so therefore, they were doing it with plants as well. They were mixing different type of plants together and getting a mixture of, like a carrot and an onion, for example. And so there were really bizarre experiments taking place. But the whole drive for this was, of course, superiority. And that does not come from, that concept does not come from God, of course. It comes from the enemy of our souls. And he thought, Satan and Lucifer thought that they were, a superior angel. He was a superior angel. And so therefore, everybody should worship me, as opposed to everybody is equal and we all have different roles and we need to fulfill our roles to the glory of God. Now, let's come back to this DNA issue. There's a project that tried to get off the ground and got off the ground a little bit, this genetic diversity project, where the Human Genome Diversity Project. Now, the goal of the diversity project was to try to be able to categorize different people, different races, if you will, into genetically different pools. But the problem was, when they started doing this, they started taking DNA from different population pools, as opposed to, one of the scientists said, "Hey, wait a minute, you can't look at the morphology, you can't look at the cultural thing." And pull people in there and take their DNA and then sample this other population pool over here and sample that DNA. We've got to take a random sample. We got to sample all of these folks from around the world in a grid type manner. That way, we don't have this innate bias that we have.
Yeah, we don't infuse the bias into what's supposed to be pure research.
Right. Yeah. And so to do the pure research, you had to do a grid over the whole, world and say, okay, this, there either is no differences genetically or there are differences in various people groups, if you will, genetically. Well, the project kind of got started, and the fellow that suggested the grid, he was the same fellow who did the Alan Wilson was his name, from the University of California, who did all the research on mitochondrial DNA that led to the Eve hypothesis, that all of our ancestors came from Africa around 200,000 years ago. Well, he was getting in the right region. He just didn't get to the Middle East. Mm-hmm. he went a little bit too far.
Missed it by that much. Yeah.
But the idea was that, hey, at least the general conclusion was that we all came from the same source, which was a big jump because of this race, problem that we've had.
If I could just put in, and that's always what I've understood, is that from my biology or anthropology classes, that granted it was 40 years ago, but that was the same supposition, that the original first human beings came from somewhere around, the middle part of the continent. And how did they get so wrong? And how did they go off the track so far?
Well, that probably, again, a sampling, issue and a philosophical issue from that point. Who wants to bring the Jewish population into a research project like this, perhaps? And, let's face it, the people scattered around the world after the Tower of Babel. When God confused the language, it scattered, and the Tower of Babel wasn't in Africa. It was, you know, in the plains of Shinar, which was Turkey and, you know, the Middle East, you know, part of the world. And everybody scattered, you know, scattered from there. And, of course, there was, you know, one group that spoke the same language that stayed in that general area and thereby developed into the, you know, that particular,
you know, there's another aspect of this, Don, that may be a clue as to why they got it so wrong in answer to David's question. They found relics, bones or fossils in Africa that they dated older than any other that were found. I don't recall stories of human remains being found in the Middle East that are aged comparably. And it may have to do with climate and the way bones are preserved in the ground and so forth. Can't tell you for sure. But that might have been the reason why science focused so quickly on Central Africa.
Well, and that has been the place where they're looking for,
you know,
our ancestors.
Makes sense, yeah. Well, what started them there, though?
You know? Yeah, so it's...
What started them there may have been the assumption that we came from chimpanzees. In other words, the whole start would have been biased by that evolutionary assumption.
Well, the other possibility is that the bones haven't been disturbed in that area because of, you know, there hasn't been a lot of civilizations, a lot of activities, lot of people walking around.
Yeah.
There was undisturbed areas that these bones happen to be laying in. And in the Middle East, there's been people walking around for thousands of years. And so all the bones, you know, for whatever reason, are not readily found.
That could very well be, too. I mean, who knows what the... I mean, obviously they know. But I think, you know, both of those assumptions that, hey, there's monkeys here, there's chimpanzees, there's, you know... And that this area is relatively undisturbed, is relatively unpopulated. So we go look over there and we find, oh, there's Lucy. Well, Lucy turned out to be a chimpanzee or a monkey. So, you know, we've got these various things. Be that as it may, I mean, the upshot of this particular project and the search for, you know, using DNA sampling, for example, to determine, oh, yes, there's a reason for having different races, turned out to be a dud. In other words, the DNA project determined that, hey, you know what, there's variation within our DNA from individual to individual. But the variation is the same whether a group of people are white or whether the group of people are black, or you're looking between whites and blacks or yellows. The variation is the same. So from a DNA point of view, people are the same.
In other words, the percentage of differentiation between individual DNAs is the same regardless of race.
Yes,
exactly. What we used to call race, or how we used to think of race, as skin color.
Right. Hmm. And there's this underlying philosophy, it's called evolution, that permeates man's thinking to say there's got to be some differences. There's got to be some differences. It is the same concept that is behind sexual orientation today. There's got to be some differences. And when you look from a DNA point of view, matter of fact, when you look from a physiological point of view, or from a phenotypic point of view, there are no differences. You know, folks, there just aren't any differences that we can find. I mean, they've dissected brains of different individuals. There are no differences. So what's the difference? What's the difference in the races other than, okay, if you have an isolated people, they're probably going to look a little different than another group over here. But the variation of those folks are going to be exactly the same as the variation of this other group of people. So, and that's the same. That's the same for homosexuals versus heterosexuals. There are no genetic differences. There are no scientific differences in folks. But there are cultural differences, and there are obviously, we are just like there's cultural differences between the Indian culture and the Japanese culture and the American culture and the Middle Eastern cultures. There are cultural differences, but those are social differences. They are not innate.
You could say they're independent of DNA.
They're independent of DNA. They are independent of how we're wired. It's just how you've been brought up, in the various cultures. So, if you're used to eating, hot, spicy food, for example, then you're probably going to more desire high, spicy food than, bland, boiled meat and potato type of diet that, the Europeans ate, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's a cultural difference.
In fact, it's funny you should bring that up, because there's another recent article at New Scientist Daily that talked about the discovery that Europeans in the Dark Ages ate soups and stews mainly. Pretty bland fare, because it wasn't a lot to choose from. There was meat, and there was onions, and a few vegetables, and they cooked it over and over in various iterations and had a relatively bland diet. I just want to mention that at BrokenRoadRadio.com, there is a link to this article there, and we tested it earlier, and apparently, David, did you get the whole article with that link?
The one you sent me,
yeah.
that I watched the video on?
Okay.
I, after the video, right below the video, was cut off.
Well, that's what I wanted to find out, because Angela Saini is the author of this article. She is interviewed. It's about a 12-minute video, and if you have an interest in this, her impetus is to stop science from using the scientific version of the word race, and get it out of their research and out of their planning, because it infects the culture with the wrong idea that somehow differences are scientific rather than cultural and linguistic and historic. And this use of the term populations versus race. And Don, I go back to a term that you have used that brings us right back to Genesis that helps clarify this whole picture. And that is, rather than the word race, you use the word kind.
Well, yes, and we're all part of a humankind. That's the deal. And there are, tremendous variations within the kind, but we're still all humans. And if people would look from a biblical perspective at other people, they would say, oh, you're just the same as me, even though you might look a little different. Or maybe even look a lot different. It doesn't matter. We're all part of the same kind. So what our founding, fathers said, that all men are created equal, there is the biblical reference that they are created equal. So the concept then that we should treat each other as equals, not treat each other as the evolutionary side would say, I am more superior to you, and I have evolved further than you.
That phrase came from the Bible. All men are created equal?
Not that particular phrase, but the concept that we are all equal.
Okay. So, but Jefferson, that's where Jefferson got the idea.
The concept is purely biblical. And hats off to this young lady, Angela Saini. You can at least see the video if you follow that link. It runs about 12 minutes. Very articulate young lady, and she's bound and determined to throw off this cultural, linguistic, and historic caricature of race and get it out of the scientific realm and help educate us all. So I recommend the video to you highly. Dr. Don Clark is a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and you can visit their website. From ours, you can click on it there. and discover that there's a vast resource of scientific knowledge, support for the biblical story of creation. That's what Creation Moments is all about. CreationMoments.com is their website. And Don, we thank you very much for your time and expertise today. Just great to hear from you every Tuesday. So have yourself a good week, and we'll see you. Okay?
All right. Very good. We'll see you folks, too.